the last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Delighted we're joined today for the Culture Club by Anne Griffin, who has been one of our most successful new novelists in recent years. When All Is Said was her big hit of 2019, which won the Newcomer of the Year Award at the Irish Book Awards, and she now has her second novel out, Listening Still. Anne, thank you very much for joining us here on the Culture Club and the last word of Today FM. You came to writing a bit late, didn't you?
I did. I was an old woman.
Hardly old, but just a little bit later than many.
Yes. No, I was. I started writing in 2013, so I was 44. And the debut novel came out when I was 50. And in the middle, in between all of there, I did an MA in creative writing in UCD. So, yeah, I came to it really late. I'd been in bookselling in my 20s. I'd worked for Waterstones for 8 years, both in Dublin and London, in the gorgeous Dawson Street branch. But I never thought I'd be a writer. Like, I mixed with many writers, but I always thought they were just... It was never something that was in me, I felt. Even though I adore storytelling, I adore reading brilliant novelists. But it wasn't until, I had left Waterstones and I had gone to work for about 20 years in charities, in big charities in Dublin now. So I was both a community development worker, and I moved then into the financial management end of things in the charities.
That's an unusual route to go before becoming a novelist, isn't it?
Well, certainly, yes.
But it certainly gives you plenty of life experience to draw
upon.
Well,
it did, and that has come with me into my books, which is lovely. I mean, if I had tried to write a book at 20, it would have been dreadful. So I wouldn't want to change the journey that I took. But yes, it meandered. My journey to writing totally meandered. And I'm glad of it.
Well, how did you develop the confidence? And the reason I asked that, we had a fascinating conversation with Ian Robertson on the programme last week about his new book on confidence.
Yes.
And particularly when people become middle-aged, maybe they've had a dream or whatever.
Yeah.
But having the confidence to actually go and try and do it is often something that they may be lacking.
Absolutely. I mean, when I was doing the MA in UCD, I'd only been writing for 2 years. And I remember... one night, standing in Bazaars at 11 o'clock, and one of my big friends, John Boyne, from our Waterstones days, I employed him in Waterstones. And I remember ringing him at 11 o'clock, waiting for the last bus home to Mullingar, crying, saying, this is too much for me. This is absolutely too much for me. I haven't got it. I haven't got what it takes. And he was just brilliant, because he was saying, look, this, you know, you do. You know, it's about just keep going. And that's all I needed to hear from somebody in writing who says, yes, this is a tough road, because you know, in order to write a good book, you have to have people who are going to read that book and say, we like this bit of it. We don't like this bit of it. We need you. Can you think about changing this? So you got to get used to people giving you that critical feedback. So you are definitely growing a thicker skin. I don't think it ever gets thick enough, though. You still have to, you know, deal with your demons about, am I really that good enough? You know, and you suffer from imposter syndrome. I certainly did on the second book.
Why so? I mean, when you came to Listening Still, which has just been published, how much were you influenced by a need or a feeling of a need to repeat what you had done when All Is Said, or to try and do something entirely different, or what were your editors and publishers telling you?
My editors and publishers were extremely supportive. They very much wanted me to create whatever it is was in me. So they weren't looking, they didn't give me the prescription and say, this is what we want from you, Anne. And so what I ended up writing was exactly that, something that had been in me and kind of in my brain for a fair few years. And, you know, it's set in an undertake. So I'd always been interested in writing about the world of funeral directing because of the mysteries that surround it. But my issue was that, I suppose, because When All Is Said had done so well, that I was kind of... I had that voice sitting on my shoulder, my own voice, my own demons, just saying, can you do it again? Are you really able for this? Or are you a one-hit wonder?
But you're happy now that you have it done.
I am so proud that it's out. I mean, it was hard at times, not just because of that voice on my head, but also because, you know, trying to promote When All Is Said and get into the heart of another book. It's, as somebody said, it's like having an affair. You're splitting yourself in two almost. So it took its time to come, but when it did, I am so glad to say that I fell in love with the character of Jeannie Masterson, who's the main character here.
We normally start the Culture Club with music, but given that you're talking about books and given your own background working in Waterstones, I want to ask you about your favourite books and authors. You've nominated Mary Lawson as your favourite author. Why so?
So Mary Lawson is a Canadian writer who lives in London, has lived most of her life really in London, or not in London, in the UK, I should say. And she writes wonderful novels set in Northern Ontario. So she writes small communities, very cut off communities, very isolated. And she just gets to the heart of how a community works. The quirky people, the lonely, isolated people, and, you know, people coming together and making a life in desolate places. And she's very humorous. She's extremely funny. And so her latest novel is called A Town Called Solace. And I was so delighted that this novel came out because she had said, after she wrote what I call the Crow Lake series, so it's a series of three books, they aren't necessarily connected in characters, but they're connected in place. After she wrote those three books, she said, "That's it, I'm retiring." And so when this book landed this year, I was overjoyed. She is an inspiration to me.
How did you find her? Because she wouldn't be a particularly well-known
name,
is she?
No, she isn't. Well, I suppose because of being in the world of books, I knew her books. But where I fell in love with her was in UCD. Because when I did the MA in UCD, she actually came over as a part of, I can't really remember, I think it was a celebration of Canadian literature and culture. And I was sitting in the audience and I got to hear her story. I didn't know that much about her in terms of her background. But she said, you know, I didn't get published until I was 55. So I was there in the audience, a 46-year-old, thinking, okay, it's absolutely
possible. You've
got time
possible. On your side.
Loads of time. 9 years. I thought this is going to be okay. And I left to come home to Mullingar to get into to Bazaars to have the 2-hour journey home, and I was so inspired and upbeat that day. So she remains one of my favourites.
We have a clip from A Town Called Solace. This is Mary Lawson.
Clara was shocked. Where had he got the keys? He shouldn't have them. Mrs. Orchard had told her there were 3 sets of 2 keys, one for the front door and one for the back, and Mrs. Orchard had one, Mrs. Joyce, who came in to clean once a week, had another, and Clara had the third. Clara wanted to tell her mother, who was no longer on the phone, but her mother sometimes cried after speaking to the policeman, and her face got all red and blotchy, and it frightened Clara. And anyway, she couldn't leave her place at the window. If she failed to keep watch for her, Rose might not come home. A light came on in Mrs. Orchard's hall. The glow of it spilled out onto the porch for a moment before the man closed the door. It was getting quite dark inside the house. The living room of Mrs. Orchard's house was right next to the living room of Clara's house, and both had windows at the side, facing each other, as well as at the front, facing the road. Clara scooted across to the side window. So long as she was at one of the windows, Rose wouldn't mind which one, arriving just as Mrs. Orchard's living room light came on and the man walked in. Clara could see everything that happened, and the first thing was that Moses, who'd been hiding under the sofa, he always hid there if anyone but Mrs. Orchard or Clara came into the house, shot across the room and out of the open door at the other end so fast that he disappeared before the man was fully through the doorway, so the man couldn't have seen him.
Mary Lawson, A Town Called Solace is the novel. Anne Griffin is with us for the Culture Club today, so let's go to music. And we always ask everybody for the first piece of music they've ever bought, in your case a single. What is it?
Banana Republic by the Boomtown Rats.
Why so? Why did you pick that?
I bought this when I was 12 years of age and I was so excited by it. I remember standing outside Golden Disc and Dunleary with it in my hand. And at that age, I hadn't a clue what this song was saying. I hadn't a clue that really it was a damnation of Irish society, particularly, you know, government and church. And I hadn't a clue at all. What I loved was how Bob Geldof sounded and the music. I just thought it was one of the most magical things. And I was so much a child that I was still into kind of stickers. And I remember I had a banana sticker, and I remember sticking this on, you know, the middle of the single, and just being just, I just listened to it over and over and over again. And it was just great. And in later years, I had a lovely moment that brought me back to that, was when Bob Geldof Sr. was my landlord. And he was the nicest landlord I've ever had. He was an absolute gentleman, and he was so kind to me, because I remember I was going through a particularly hard time. And I went out to him one day. He was in the back garden, because his house and the house of flats that I lived in were next door to each other. And he had his garden in the back of our block of flats. And he was out digging away in the garden. And I went out to tell him something. And I remember I started to cry, and he just gave me the biggest hug. And to this day, I find it very, very emotional, because he was just extremely kind and concerned about me. And when I'd go into his house, maybe to give him the rent or whatever, there'd be lovely pictures from his grandchildren, from Bob Jr.'s children in London. And it was just lovely to see them all around his mantelpiece. So I feel a real connection to that family that they don't really know about.
Let's hear a little bit of Banana Republic.
Banana Republic, safety car, screaming in the suffering sea, sounds like crime. Everywhere I go, yeah, everywhere I see, black and blue uniforms. Police and breeze.
And I wonder, do you wonder while you're sleeping with your heart? Sharing beds with history, it's like a Lincoln running sauce. 40 shades of green, yeah, 60 shades of red. Heroes going cheap these days, price a bullet in the head.
Banana Republic, safety car, suffering the screaming sea, sounds like time. Everywhere I go, yeah, everywhere I see, the black and blue uniforms, police and priests.
Take care of the media, up a garden path, let me stand aside.
Bob Geldof's Boomtown Rats, Banana Republic, from sometime, I think the early 1980s, was it?
Yeah, I was 12, so now I have to do the maths now.
It would have been around 1980, yeah, I think. Yeah, it was after their biggest hits, Rat Trap and I Don't Like Mondays.
Yeah.
Okay, your favourite album comes also from your favourite band. So we're going to talk all about your deep love for Bell X1.
Love them, Matt. I just love them. Yeah, so I've chosen Flock as my favourite album, because, well, it's just brilliant. But it came out in 2005, and that was the year that my son was born. And I suppose when children come into your life, everything changes. So you kind of have distinct memories of things around that time. One of the things I love about Paul Noonan in particular, and what he writes is how real his stuff is. What I mean by that is, for example, the story Rocky Took a Lover, which is one of the songs, the story behind Rocky Took a Lover, which is one of the songs on this album, is about a homeless man who lived out the back of where Paul Noonan and the lads were living at the time in Dublin. And they had a love-hate relationship, and sometimes Rocky could be very, very difficult, and other times they're all great mates. But this one morning, Paul Noonan looked out the window and saw that Rocky had a lady friend with him. And so he'd obviously had a lovely night with this woman. And this song is so beautiful. It captures what Paul felt, the conversation between those two people on that night of romance, which is just a magnificent story and a beautiful song.
Let's hear a little bit of Rocky Takes a Lover.
That's what I'll do.
seen from this gutter. We're still staring at the stars. She sells you going shine last night. All you did was curse those stars, 'cause they sang to you of hope. We said so is life, and it takes it away. But like all the greats, you'll burn out someday. She said I don't mind, I don't wanna get bored. I don't wanna end up beached on the shore. I wanna be the star. I wanna be the star. I wanna be the star. Burn for you. I'll shine for you. That's what I'll do.
Bella X1, Rocky Takes a Lover from Flock. And you still remain a big fan even of the modern day stuff.
I absolutely love their stuff. And they are, they're like poets as far as I'm concerned, and they don't use verbose, flowery language. They just use the language of real life. And like, even say from Flock, there's a song called My Firstborn for a Song. And so like in this, there's a line that goes, somewhere in the sea of club milks, tea and ashtrays, there is a song. And I just adore that kind of stuff. I mean, he does it again and again and again, like more in more, you know, recent days, say with the Great Defector, he says, you know, and this is the romantic line, you're the chocolate at the end of my cornetto. I mean, is there anything more beautiful?
One last bit of music before we go to the break. We're in the Culture Club with Anne Griffin, the novelist. Best gig you were at? You've nominated one from your adopted town of Mullingar.
Yes, I have indeed. And so this was a lovely intimate gig with the four of us. And I just, so it was in the stables in Mullingar, which is a tiny, tiny venue, and so very intimate. And listening to these guys play, they're so acoustic. It was very, very moving. And when they sang in particular, gospel choir, and Brendan starts off by saying in the song, let me start by saying, I'm not sure there's a God. So the guy in the song is there in a church and he is listening to this midnight gospel choir. And for me in that moment, I thought, that is me. I am that person who's a non-believer, but still finds herself in a church because there's something so peaceful about it. I don't go to mass, but I will find myself, if I'm passing a church, particularly in a different town or something that I don't know, I'll go in and just have a few minutes and just breathe in that beautiful calm and silence. But after that gig, the lads actually came out to have a pint because it's so intimate. They have to have the pint with the fans, unfortunately for them. And my husband, who loves chatting, went in with the big handshake, and I was mortified because I'm such an introvert. But anyway, I swallowed all of that and had a lovely chat with them and was able to thank them for how they had gotten me through accountancy exams that I had sat, because I would just listen to them, you know, until the doors of the exam hall opened, and I would feel totally calm because they are so soothing, these guys. They're just brilliant.
Let's hear a little bit of gospel choir.
Can I stop by saying, I'm not sure there's a God, and this is no confession, so please don't start. It's just in case you're wondering why I come round here a lot. Some prefer illusion, prefer it to the pain, and some ignore the exit sign, they'd rather play the game. But when it all comes down to it, it gets you just the same. She's beat, dead on her feet, and she sings in a midnight.
soul there. She just stares at the stars. So tell me it's all right if I get close to you.
The four of us in gospel choir. So clearly, Anne Griffin, lyrics and stories and songs are important to you in your musical choices.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it means a lot. I listen to words all the time. You know, like any other writer, I'm on the street listening to people. I want to hear what people are saying, you know, and sometimes that makes it into my books. So lyrics are extremely important.
Well, great. We'll get to the rest of your choices in the Culture Club and Griffin after this quick break. Welcome back to the second part of the Culture Club here on The Last Word of Today FM. Anne Griffin, the novelist, her author of When All Is Said, and now the new novel Listening Still, is with us. And you've nominated as your favourite movie Garage with Mark O'Halloran, who actually did a Culture Club with us last year. Why have you picked Garage?
Because this movie is one of those movies where I couldn't speak after it. It was so disturbing is the wrong word. It just moved me so much. The vulnerability of the character that Pat Short plays just touched something deep inside of me. And I will never forget the final scene of Pat Short. I just thought both the writing of Mark O'Halloran, Lenny Abramson's directing, and Pat Short's portrayal of this very vulnerable garage attendant just was phenomenal, and had won many awards, and rightly so. And it's just it just shows how some people in life who aren't as able as others can just, in trying to fit in, they make a wrong decision, and the consequences of that is just devastating. So I just think it is Irish film writing and directing at its zenith. Absolutely brilliant movie.
We have one other movie you picked as well, which we do have a clip from. One I have to say I'm not familiar with, although the star of it, Sam Rockwell, has also been a guest here on The Last Word previously.
Oh my goodness, right. I'm going back into the archive.
Okay. The movie that I'm not familiar with is The Way, Way Back. Tell us about this.
Well, you know, I chose this because of the acting within it. The story itself is about a 14-year-old boy who just is at that point in his life where he doesn't know himself and he desperately wants to. And he kind of, they're away on summer holidays with his mother and the mother's partner, and it's all going terribly wrong. And he is the loneliest soul. And he is a person you just want to throw your arms around and hug and say, it's okay, you will get there, you'll find out who you are. And it's the portrayal of this character by Liam James, the actor, that just impressed me so much. And then the relationship that he forms with Sam Rockwell, who plays a wonderful kooky character. And it's the magic of those two people together. And that is why I chose this movie.
We have a clip from it.
Now, I know I keep asking you, but when are we getting new employee T-shirts?
2 years from yesterday.
No, all joking aside, and this makes me self-conscious about my body. It's not a place that I want to be.
Disappoint me, kid. You're late. You plan on making a habit of this?
What?
You're fired!
But I just...
You make a valid point. Welcome back. It's benefits.
You waste an exorbitant amount of time. You know that?
Suit up! You don't look too pumped.
Come on, let's get pumped. This is the place where dreams are made or destroyed. Depends on how you feel about working at a water park.
We have a situation over at Harpoon Lagoon.
Is it a homicide?
Yeah, it's a homicide.
I knew this day would come.
I'm gonna stay here in the booth no one comes to.
The Way, Way Back. Sam Rockwell, Liam James, Maya Rudolph. Okay. Favourite play or theatre show or musical? What are you going for?
I'm going for Made in China by Marco Rowe and a wonderful Irish playwright. And it is such a hard-hitting play. This one's about three young lads, a gangland story in Dublin. And it's a very, very physical play, and it has a real impact on the audience. And I saw this in the Mullingar Arts Centre. And so this is a bit of a shout out to amateur dramatics, because I suppose living in Mullingar, living in rural Ireland, I've kind of missed being able to get through to the big theatres. And so I often end up going to these wonderful plays. And this wonderful, wonderful play was done by three young lads in their 20s in from Mullingar, and they did everything themselves, and it blew me away. And so it's just a shout out to those people who, you know, week after week in rural areas bring us wonderful theatre.
And hopefully they'll be able to do so again after they can reopen after COVID. Okay, television shows. We ask, as in music for the first single, we ask, what was the TV show that you remember most from your childhood and youth?
So it's Grange Hill. And, you know, Grange Hill was everything that my world was not. It was a school with boys and girls. It was a school where you didn't have to have your white socks up to your knees, where you weren't given out to because, you know, you weren't wearing the right indoor slippers that we had to.
And so where did you go to school?
I know. Well, I went to an Irish convent school, obviously. Yeah, I know. Indoor slippers. Honest to God. And I was caught one day going down the corridor in my runners because I was the sports captain, which is actually hilarious. I was sports captain of the school. I am no more sporty. I was just a great administrator. And yeah, I was caught. And I can't remember what the punishment was, but it was bad. I remember it being bad. Anyway, so I just would come home and watch Grange Hill and just go into another world that I thought was magnificent.
And then as an adult, what do you like most?
QI. I adore QI because it does two things that I love. It does laughter and it does learning. Now, one of my downfalls is I'm absolutely crap at remembering things. So I watch QI and I learn all of these new things on a Friday night, and then by Sunday it's gone. I can tell you two things I've learned from QI. I've learned how to eat a mango properly, and I've learned that crisps are the worst thing for tooth decay. So there you go. So they're the only two things I remember of all the magnificent facts that come through that show. That's what I have learned, but I love it.
In the bit that we have, it says Stephen Fry gets tongue tied over the Acropolis, and Bill Bailey, Rob Brydon, Jimmy Carr and Alan Davis all feature.
Brilliant.
They say of the Acropolis where the Parthenon is. They say of the Acropolis where
the
Parthenon is. They say of the Acropolis where the Parthenon is. That they...
Turns out they didn't say anything at all.
They say of the Acropolis where the Parthenon is.
Is a remnant of the stone.
Sorry, I just got a question. What do they say about the Acropolis where the Parthenon is?
They say.
What do they say?
He's going to say.
Okay, QI sounding a bit like a 21st century Monty Python sketch. Okay, we're nearly out of time, Anne Griffin, so very quickly, okay. We won't be able to make clips, but can you nominate a couple of podcasts and why you listen to them?
So my first one is You're Wrong About, and this is an American podcast produced and presented by Sarah Marshall and Michael Hobbs, and I love it because it explores misunderstood big media events that happen, particularly in America. So it goes from Iran-Contra right through to O.J. Simpson, right through the Tuskegee syphilis study that was done back in
I don't worry, you won't remember the dates given
exactly
what you told us.
I absolutely won't. And the second one, on topic here, because on the second one, it's You're Dead to Me, which is a history podcast. I studied history. I have a BA in history. Couldn't remember a date or a war or what happened in them to save my life. So I love that Greg Jenner, who produced Horrible Histories, wonderful program, has done this podcast for adults. And it goes through it. It brings a specialist in, like a professor or a doctor, alongside a comedian, my favorite thing. So again, it's laughter and learning with this, going back over wonderful historical events.
Anne Griffin, thank you so much for being with us through the Culture Club and The Last Word on Today FM. And best wishes for your new novel, the follow-up to When All Is Said. The new novel is called Listening Still. That's it for today's programme here on The Last Word on Today FM.